The following message is brought to you by the Ezra Institute for Contemporary Christianity. To learn more about the Ezra Institute's mission to advance the Lordship of Christ, please visit www.ezrainstitute.ca.
So, Joe, given the centrality of this doctrine in Islam, can you tease out for us a little bit more about what the implications are for this doctrine of Tawheed? How does it play out?
Okay, so that's a critical question. What are the implications of saying that God isn't triune, but what does it mean for God to be a unitary being? In the first instance, we can say that that really this concept of God, and I think there's good evidence for this, comes out of a pagan understanding of God's being. In fact, I believe that Islam really represents an attempt to synthesize a pagan conception of God as pure oneness, pure unity, which is really the essence of both pantheism and polytheism, that you have some kind of mystical divine presence or unity that undergirds everything on the one hand. And then Islam at the same time tries to bring that idea of God into a sort of coherent, tries to make it, bring it into relationship with an idea, Hebraic idea of revelation, of a God somehow speaking. So you had Zoroastrianism in the Arabian Peninsula, which was both dualistic and monotheistic at the same time. Both elements were present. They proclaimed a supreme divinity that everybody should worship. You had Arian Christianity in the region, which was also a kind of Unitarian vision, of a heretical vision of version of Christianity. And you had an Allah, a supreme deity, as the head of the pantheon at the Kaaba in Mecca, which was very much a pagan understanding of God. Now, so there were a variety of influences that led to the Islamic formulation of the doctrine of God. And at root, it's very similar to the Greek philosopher's view, actually, of God, especially Plotinus, God as an absolute, small g, as an absolute unity about which nothing can really be known or said. In fact, if you say anything about an absolute unity, it is no longer an absolute unity. So Plotinus tried to confront this difficulty. And Islamic philosophers and scholars have tried to confront the same issue. They, in speaking of Tawhid, they think they're protecting the transcendence of God and his dignity and his separateness. But what happens with an absolute unity is that it collapses into pantheism. So God in pantheistic conceptions becomes indistinguishable from nature itself. Creation becomes emanation. So rather than a free act of the will, creation just becomes an emanation from this absolute unity. And actually the difficulty within Islam, even though it formally rejected pantheism and Aristotle's emanation idea, actually the most philosophically coherent version of Islam is Sufism. And Sufism is mysticism. Because in Sufism, you are trying to have a mystical encounter with this absolute one, this absolute unity. So the implication of Tawheed is very much fleshed out in Islam in concrete ways. First of all, God cannot be known in himself. God is not a relational being. Man can't, is not made in his image. You can't relate to God directly. There's no intimate relationship with God. He's unknowable. There's no truly Islamic theology. That's an offensive term because you can't really describe what God is like. He's an ineffable, unknowable essence. And in order to, really that collapses into pantheism. And actually, as you look at many of the Islamic philosophers, that's where they ended up. Allah is all is Allah. There's only one will in the universe. So in Islam, you get a very strong sense that God is a force. You have fatalism. As you had in all pantheism, in paganism, you have fatalism. Inshallah, if Allah wills, you have pure will, pure force, and that will or force gets collapsed with or it becomes indistinguishable from everything that happens. So if it's just if Allah wills. And in the end, the human person becomes indistinguishable, really, from Allah. So there's the first problem. You have fatalism. And that leads to the second problem, is how are you going to, since pantheism really is an irrationalistic worldview, you have a mystical leap into an encounter with this absolute one, this bare unity. And Muhammad himself actually spent weeks seeking an encounter with God in the mountains, where he had various dreams and he wondered whether he was being possessed by a jinn and so on and so forth. That tradition is basic to Islam, this Sufist tradition of mystical encounter. How do you turn that into a religion that is a way of life that is going to be uniform and create a social order? I mean, mystics have different kinds of experiences. So how do you have a nature religion, really, with a pantheistic conception of God? How do you have that become a cultural force? And that was the fundamental problem that Muhammad confronted himself.
Thank you for listening to this message brought to you by the Ezra Institute for Contemporary Christianity. Please feel free to share it with friends, but do not charge for or alter the material in any way without the express written consent of the EICC. Thank you.